On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Americans are among the most religious people on earth, if you ask if they believe. But if you dig a little deeper and ask for a few details on their religion or anyone else's, don't expect too much. Surveys show only half of Americans can name even one of the four Gospels, never mind the four noble truths of Buddhism or the Ten Commandments. My guest today, religious studies scholar Stephen Prothrow, says that religious illiteracy is a serious problem in a world where so much conflict, politics, and conviction is framed in religious terms. Such a big problem, he argues, that we need to start teaching religion in public schools to know what we're all talking about. Up next on Point, a call for religious literacy starting in our schools. Joining me today in the studio is Stephen Prothrow. He chairs the Department of Religion at Boston University and is professor of American and Asian Religious Studies. He's author of American Jesus and now of Religious Literacy, What Every American Needs to Know and Doesn't. And I should say, right off the bat, you can test your own religious literacy right now with 15 short questions on our website, onpointradio.org. They are Professor Prothrow's questions. Here's one. God helps those who help themselves. Is it in the Bible? And if so, where? Stephen Prothrow, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You say surveys show we don't know what we're talking about when we talk about religion. Survey results like what?
Oh, boy, there's a lot of them. Only about a third of Americans know that Jesus delivered the Sermon on the Mount. Sometimes you ask people, they'll say, oh, maybe that was Billy Graham. Or a lot of people don't know where Jesus was born. Was Jesus born in Bethlehem? Yes, he was, according to the Bible. Or one of my favorites, who was Noah's wife? Joan of Arc is what about one out of every 10 Americans will tell you when you ask them that question.
Okay, one out of 10. So 10% who may not be plugged in. Is that surprising? I mean, not even 90% of Americans are Christian.
Right. Well, that's not – that one is more funny than it's surprising, I suppose. But the fact that only half of American adults can name even one of the four Gospels, this is sort of shocking illiteracy for when we think about the United States as a country with 85% Christians, where politicians – both Republicans and Democrats are so keen to talk about religion, we often just don't know what they're talking about.
Now, I'm trying to figure where you're coming from here. The last time we talked, you had your book, American Jesus, out. And that was, I thought, kind of a celebration of all the wild and woolly ways that Americans go about, those who do, go about worshiping Jesus. And you had some pretty far-out stories there from the highways and byways and hinterlands of this country. Now, all of a sudden, you're Professor Prothrow, all upset because we're not getting good grades on our quizzes. So which is it? Like, land of the free, home of the brave, worship any way you like, or, you know all the details, or Stephen Prothrow is going to rap you on the fingers?
Well, I hope I'm not being a schoolmarm, but I think that we can love Jesus and be really interested in Jesus without knowing a particularly large amount of what he has to say. That's one of the arguments I make in the book, that we may be a nation of Jesus lovers, but there aren't that many people opening their Bibles, listening to what Jesus has to say, or listening to what the stories are in the book of Genesis.
And whether it's Jesus or Moses or Muhammad, what does that matter? You might have many people say, well, look, religion is personal. We've got separation of church and state in this country. Religion's not necessarily... it's not a state religion, certainly, in this country. We have many. So why does it matter if we have religious illiteracy?
Well, it matters because religion is increasingly important in politics. Politicians are using religious reasons all the time when they talk, as you say, about stem cell research, or they talk about abortion, or they talk about even the environment. People are making appeals to biblical arguments, to Christian arguments, and sometimes to arguments from other world religions. So here at home, we understand that Republicans have been using religion for some time, but now the Democrats, as you know, are getting into the game, and religion is really rampaging into the public space. And the question is, how many people are going to be able to participate in those conversations? That's the domestic issue. The issue in international affairs is, well, how are we going to understand what's going on in Iraq if we don't know the difference between a Sunni and a Shiite? Or how are we going to understand, say, an upcoming hotspot perhaps in Kashmir if we don't understand the difference between Hindus and Muslims, who are at odds over that space.
So is that social studies or religious studies? Do you have to have read the Bhagavad Gita to understand what's going on in Kashmir? Sunni and Shia, isn't that as much a social question as it is a religious question, a political question as religious?
Well, one of the huge problems, Tom, is that we've taken all these problems to be social and political and economic instead of understanding them to be religious. I mean, is the Middle East a political problem? I suppose it is. But it's a religious problem at least also. And for years and years and decades, we've been trying to distill these problems down to economic problems or problems about land or problems about politics. And there are also problems about religion. And, you know, we're finally talking about Iraq as a sectarian battle. And that's saying, you know, a battle between Sunnis and Shiites. Well, you know, who are these people and, you know, which side is Al-Qaeda on? These are basic information that citizens should know and, more importantly, people in the White House should know. And I'm not convinced that either citizens or our leaders know much about any of this.
It's funny how you describe why that's the case. You know, you say on the one hand, for many years, a certain sector of American society just presumed that we were headed toward a secular future, and all of this would kind of become history, not so very important. At the same time, then we had a kind of a revival evangelical boom, but as you describe it, evangelicals are not necessarily, by and large, don't necessarily have a better mastery of the details of the faith than others.
That's right. I mean, a lot of people will defer to evangelicals when it comes to questions about the Bible. If there's a debate about the environment and what does God say about the ecology and the environment in the book of Genesis, or what does the Bible say about stem cell research, sometimes when an evangelical will make an appeal there, either on the left or on the right, because evangelicals are on both sides of these questions, especially Catholics, say my Catholic friends will defer and they'll say, oh, I don't know anything about the Bible. I can't engage in this question. But evangelicals don't know as much about the Bible as one might imagine. And they've been, evangelical intellectuals have been talking about this problem for 20 years about biblical illiteracy among evangelicals. On a number of surveys, Jews do better than evangelicals on basic questions like where was Jesus born. You'll find that sometimes Jews will do better than evangelicals. And on other surveys, you'll find that kids in private schools do better as an aggregate than evangelicals do about a lot of questions about Christian history.
You teach university students. When they come into your classes, what do you observe about their, whatever their faith, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, whatever it is, what do you observe about their own literacy, their American college students?
Well, what I observe is they really don't know anything about religion. I mean, I finally started giving them quizzes because I would sort of start with assumptions that I could refer to the Gospel of Matthew and they might have, or I could refer to the Sermon on the Mount.
Or the Good Samaritan.
Or the Good Samaritan story. Or I could refer maybe to, say, like you just referred to the Bhagavad Gita, a Hindu holy text, that I could make these kinds of very, very basic references. And what I finally learned is that I couldn't do that because they aren't familiar with these stories. They aren't familiar with the Bible stories. They will, I give them a quiz where I ask them to match up certain figures in the Bible with certain stories in the Bible. So I'll give them Paul and I'll give them Moses, and I'll give them Road to Damascus, and I'll give them the Exodus story. And pretty soon we have Jesus parting the Red Sea, and we have you know, Paul binding his, you know, binding Isaac, and we have, you know, the Adam, you know, the serpent going around getting on the ark. You know, so it's a very confusing picture for a lot of my students.
What do you attribute that to? People are reportedly going to church in great numbers. Aren't they, and for that matter, synagogue and mosque, aren't they being taught there?
Well, they're not being taught there. A lot of homes, well, the overwhelming majority of homes in America have the Bible, but the Bible is a sort of, you know, object in the home. It's a material object rather than something that people pick up and read and even less discuss. And in Sunday schools and Sabbath schools and churches and synagogues, there's a lot more discussion about everyday life, about ethics, about our own individual experiences, how we're getting along with our spouses or our kids or our parents, what we should do as we walk around the world and face ethical questions, than there is about basic storytelling about this is the story of Moses, this is the story of Jesus, or in the Hindu case, you know, this is the story of Krishna.
Is that wrong? Maybe those everyday stories are attempting to set religious teaching in contemporary narratives. Is it so important to have the classical narratives? Are we forever to be framed by the stories of 1,000 and 2,000 and 3,000 years ago?
Well, my approach to this is not as a person who is trying to make America more religious. America is already astonishingly religious. Mm-hmm. My approach is really from the civic angle. So the question for me is, what kind of information do Americans need to follow the kinds of conversations that we're having here at home politically, where religion comes up, and what kind of information do we need to make sense of the world out there? And my argument is that we need to know when a president quotes, say, George Bush, talks about the Good Samaritan story. He talks about in his first inaugural address, when we walk down the Jericho Road, this mm-hmm. is his compassionate conservatism. Mm-hmm. When we walk down the Jericho Road, we're not going to walk by that poor person on the other side of the road. We're going to go over and help them. Mm-hmm. And after that, there are all these comments.
If you don't know what he's talking
right,
about there,
talking
it just
about?
Flies by.
Right. You don't know that it's the Good Samaritan story. Or when appeals are made, saying people will say, oh, the Bible's opposed to stem cell research. Or the Bible's opposed to homosexuality, so we shouldn't have gay marriage. Well, is that true? I mean, what does the Bible say about gay marriage? What does the Bible say about capital punishment? People will sort of point to it without really engaging it in debates. And I think that impoverishes our political life, and it effectively disenfranchises people who don't know enough about religion to engage in the debates where religion comes up.
Not to mention, God helps them who help themselves. We asked it earlier. It's on your quiz. Well, we'll just lay this one out there. No, it's not in the Bible. It's Benjamin Franklin.
It's not in the
and
Bible.
Off we go.
And on some surveys, when you ask people open-ended question, give a Bible quote, in some surveys, that comes up first. It's not even in the Bible. And it's not even biblical. I don't even think that either the Jewish or Christian biblical understanding of God is that, oh, God only helps, like, people who are helping themselves. God's supposed to be helping, like, poor people and stuff.
Right. So get out there and grab, you would think. I took the little religious literacy quiz here, Stephen Prother, and it's at our website, onpointradio.org. You can take it, too, if you like. I didn't do too bad. I was raised pretty deep in the church and have lived in countries where Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam were very common. A kind of, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament, I couldn't come up with numbers there just offhand, but forgot about coveting in the Ten Commandments. The Four Noble Truths of Buddhism, I had the kind of general idea there at the outset, but by the time you get to the fourth, I was pretty thin. But when you give this test, what do you generally find? 15 questions, pretty straightforward. Do people fail it in a majority, in a minority? What?
Well, I've given it over the last couple of years to my students at Boston University. And these are, to be fair, I don't give it at the end of my class. That would be embarrassing. I give it at the beginning. And 17% only have passed. 17% only have passed the test. It's a test that, you know, like you say, Ten Commandments, the seven sacraments of Catholicism.
Oh, yeah. I petered out there after marriage and baptism and communion confirmation.
Well, yeah. So, you know, often the Catholic kids will get a couple of the sacraments. Often Protestant kids can't do that. Catholic students will do pretty poorly on the biblical stuff. You know, for as much talk as, oh, it's after Vatican II in the 60s, Catholics were really turned back toward the Bible. I don't see very much evidence of that. And very little understanding of religions outside of Christianity and Islam. It's interesting that in the last couple of years, students can tell you that the Quran is, you know, the Muslim holy book. About 85-90% can say that, but they can't tell you a Hindu scripture or even one of the Four Noble Truths. And hardly anybody can name the Ten Commandments. I mean, maybe one out of every 100 or 200 of my students can do that.
Okay, so you say if we don't have this religious knowledge, whether or not one is religious, you can't be an educated citizen, you can't take effective part in the national and, for that matter, the global debates and issues that are in front of us. So describe for us what you would do about it with American public school children.
Well, I think we need to teach about religion in the public schools. I mean, obviously it's unconstitutional to be trying to convert kids to Judaism or Christianity or Buddhism in the public schools. I don't think anybody is contemplating that, certainly not myself. But I don't see why religion should be the one subject that's somehow taboo in the public schools, as if we can't teach about it. This is arguably the most important thing we need to know about what's going on, say, in the Middle East and the war in Iraq. And to think that we're bringing up another generation of young Americans who know as little about the world's religions as our contemporary leaders do, to me, is really frightening.
So how would you do it? You bring Sister Mary Hannah over to, you know, do you bring representatives of the religions?
No.
You get the public school teachers to somehow become, well, you just put out a textbook like a social studies textbook full of the basic tenets?
Right. Well, already there is some teaching about religion that's done in many public schools. Usually in 7th or 8th grade, there's a couple weeks where students will focus on a little bit about Buddhism, a little bit about Hinduism, a teeny bit about Islam. So these subjects are often being taught. 1 in 12 schools in the country already has courses about the Bible, Bible as Literature courses. And there are world religions courses. There's a whole school district out in California, Modesto, California, that has instituted very successfully a ninth grade world religions curriculum. So there's curriculum out there, and there's training programs out there.
And you would teach people what? Put yourself in the voice of the teacher. Give us some examples of what, let's say, from Christianity, what might be taught exactly?
Well, Christianity, you'd say, okay, there was this guy named Jesus, and he established this religion, and it has a scripture, and it has a New Testament and an Old Testament, and the scripture has these four gospels, and these four gospels tell the story of this guy who goes around healing people and preaching, and this is his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. You might want to hear about this.
Aren't you in trouble there right from the get-go? This guy. Then you've got, you know,
well,
believers.
This man.
This guy. This is the Savior. This is the Son of God. This is Christ.
Well, and then that's very useful in the classroom. You can say, yes, absolutely. There are people who believe that this person was God. There's people who believe that this person was the Messiah. And then there's people who believe that this person wasn't the Messiah, and they are in other religions.
Useful in the classroom, but it might be hell on earth at the parent-teacher meeting.
Well, maybe. I just think you have to appreciate that there's a way to talk about religion other than the way we talked about it in Sunday school if we were raised Christian, or we talk about it in our mosque if we're Muslims. I mean, otherwise, it's pretty hopeless if we think the only way to talk about religion is in a religious way. I think you can talk about religion in an academic way, and I think we need to be able to talk about it in an academic way. Otherwise, we're in really deep trouble.
Mm. It's a provocative thought, but Stephen Prothero's got it right out there, and we can see, there's no doubt about it, religion is behind an awful lot of the big issues that the country and the world are facing right now. I want to get a little perspective and response on this. Joining us from Chevy Chase, Maryland, is the Reverend Barry Lynn. He's executive director of the Washington, D.C.-based Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You can hear what they're all about right in the title. He's author of Piety and Politics. He's also a civil liberties lawyer and ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. Reverend Barry Lynn, thanks for joining us.
Certainly. Hello there, Tom.
Stephen Prothero is saying we don't have enough religious literacy to know what we're talking about when public issues veer into religion, which they do all the time. Are you sympathetic to that? And what about the idea that we need to educate our children in the public schools so they can have civil discourse around religion?
I was a little more sympathetic until about 20 minutes ago when I've been listening, of course, to his comments and think this whole argument is deeply flawed. Obviously, we have a cultural literacy problem in this country, but it's not simply about religion or the Bible. We also have a geographical literacy problem, historical literacy problem, scientific illiteracy problem. And frankly, I don't think that Bible literacy should be a top priority for public schools. And when it is taught in certain ways, including some of the ways that he recommends in his own new book, I think it becomes a constitutional liability. And on this point of politicians are always talking about religion, well, frankly, I'd rather get the politicians out of talking about religion than interjecting this kind of religious study into public schools so we can understand what the politicians think they're saying. I can assure you that if the Jericho Road was something George Bush understood, he wouldn't be cutting social programs. He'd be expanding the funds for them. So I don't think that the public schools are the place where we resolve these historical, theological debates. Where was Jesus really born? You know, there is a question about whether he was really born in Bethlehem. This is appropriate for churches, including the church I attend, the church many of your listeners attend, the synagogue, the mosque, the temple. It is not appropriate to have these kinds of discussions in a specific required course, as I understand what the professor wants to do ultimately here, in America's public schools.
So you wouldn't make it an educational priority, but let me go to your expertise here on separation of church and state. Would you see it a constitutional problem, a legal problem, to teach not faith but religion, religious studies in public schools? Does that jive with the law and the court interpretation?
Well, it depends what the curriculum is. In several cases, courts have actually ruled that particular Bible curricula really, either on the face of them or as they were promoted in the school, did violate the First Amendment because they turned from starting perhaps on day one with the, quote, objective study of religion into the promotion of religion, you know, by the second week and the fourth week. So it's not at all clear that most of the curricula out there pass constitutional muster. There is one called the Bible Literacy Project that the professor likes and talks about in his book, which I think illustrates a couple of things. First of all, I mean, it's deeply flawed. It came out even after being vetted allegedly by all kinds of academics with a completely fabricated quote by Alexis de Tocqueville about religion in America, one that's been debunked for a decade or more as not even being accurate. It's in none of de Tocqueville's writings. And then when the first edition came out and raised some questions like, was it fair? I remember one of the examples is, was it fair for God to throw, you know, Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden? This infuriated right-wing fundamentalists. They demanded changes in the text itself, and the new edition that's about to come out has changes based on what fundamentalists said was wrong with the first edition. So the tendency is to turn these even so-called objective studies into something else. It is perfectly acceptable when references come up to washing your hands of an affair in a textbook in a Southern literature class to say, oh, that does come from the Christian Bible. That's a reference to washing the hands.
Pontius Pilate and all the rest
of it. I mean, when it naturally comes up in the curriculum, just like any other reference, of course it's necessary to put it in perspective. But
Barry Lynn, hold the phone for a second. You've got a lot on the table there. I want to give Stephen Prothero a chance to respond. Stephen Prothero, Barry Lynn says, not the most important thing we should be teaching, and very quickly, easily, not legal if it slides off into, you know, all the areas it could slide into.
Well, all you have to do is read what the Supreme Court actually says about this to realize that Barry Lynn is just really wrong. The Supreme Court has ruled repeatedly on religion and education, in public education issues. And whenever it tells us that religion, in other words, preaching religion, is inappropriate in the public schools, whether that's prayer or whether that's devotional Bible reading, which is totally unconstitutional and wrong, or trying to convert some kid to our Savior, as some of these Bible curricula have tried to do, that's evidently and obviously wrong. And the court says that. But then the court also says, listen, don't misunderstand us. You know, don't read us the way Barry Lynn is reading us. You know, understand that we think religion is important. We think you can't understand the history of Western literature, the history of Western music, political, public affairs in the world. You can't understand that without understanding something about religion. And are we going to doom our kids to ignorance about the world and ignorance about the history of American literature, the history of Western literature, because we're afraid that there's going to be some you know, teachers who are going to be trying to convert kids or you know, to a particular religion? So the constitutional question is really, really clear, and that is that the objective study of religion is absolutely appropriate, and not just appropriate, the Supreme Court justices say, but desirable and important. So there's no constitutional question here. The question is whether individual curricula or individual teachers are going to be trying to preach to their kids. And if they do that, that's unconstitutional and that's wrong. But if they don't, and already this subject is being taught, I mean, you know, Barry, you know, admits as much when he says, oh, when it comes up in the course of things, we can talk about this. Well, why does it have to just come up in the course of things? Why can't we have a course on this to focus on it?
Barry Lynn, I've just got you for another minute. Let me put this to you. You say you wish instead politicians might cease and desist from your separation of church and state view and using religious references. But isn't that a vain hope in a society of such religiosity as ours? What about the core point that Stephen Prothero is making? So if it's going to be out there, let's at least know what the heck we're talking about.
Well, because the politicians don't even know what they're talking about. That's why Howard Dean said
Well, that's one of my problems. I wish they did. If they did, we'd have better discussions about
this.
Well, we
might.
You're as illiterate as everybody else.
No, actually, Stephen, we wouldn't, because the truth is we are not a country that is supposed to resolve issues, including stem cell research or global climate change, on the basis of Bible-quoting wars on the floor of Congress. That is not the basis for our decision-making. That is not what the American constitutional system depends upon. And by the way, I think you're just simply wrong on the Supreme Court never said in order to understand public issues, we have to have a Bible class required of high school students. They said you can teach objectively. My point was, in general, these courses do not teach objectively. And as you point out in your own book, in Tennessee and Texas and other places, the curriculum have been struck down or removed from the school precisely because they've slipped into just what I said is the tendency in most of these courses. So I think you really are misstating what the Supreme Court said.
Barry, we've got your perspective loud and clear. I've got callers to turn to here. We're grateful to you for joining us today. Barry Lynn of the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Let's go to Daniel Dennett, calling from Medford, Massachusetts. Daniel Dennett, as in the philosophy professor at Tufts University. Professor Dennett, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
So you've got the conversation in your ear?
I've been listening. And interesting, because I agree with Barry Lynn about the principles, but I don't agree with him that we shouldn't have, in fact, compulsory education about world religions in the schools. And I have advocated that. And I
want
to...
Wait, you want it or you don't want it, Daniel Dennett?
I want it. I say that the ignorance of world religions is one of the most dangerous forms of ignorance in the world.
But heavens to Betsy, you're so critical of religion. Would your curriculum be a debunking course?
No, it would not. It would be very strictly facts about all the world's religions, including their texts, their traditions, their prohibitions, their rituals, their requirements, and their history.
But what would your bottom line be? I've read your work. Your bottom line seems to be this is a virus and a plague on humanity.
Well, first of all, let's look at the word virus. Most of the viruses in the world are perfectly harmless, and in fact, most of them in your body actually do you some good. And what I want to do is what you might call a civic public health measure. Let's have the education system so that the religions that survive and thrive are the good ones. And the way to do that is to make sure that the young people in all religious groups, homeschoolers, private schools, public schools, they know about all religions, and they know about their own religion, and they know how their own religion appears to others.
Stephen Prothero, here's the philosopher skeptic saying, bring on the education of religion.
Well, a lot of skeptics, I appreciate Professor Dennett's comments, but a lot of atheists and a lot of skeptics and a lot of evangelicals are in favor of this approach. I mean, part of the confidence here is that if students learn objectively about the world's religions, they're going to come to see the truth. And if you believe that the truth is, you know, evangelical Christianity, you might have confidence that in these public school courses, they'll come around to you.
And parents want Islam and Judaism and Buddhism and Hinduism taught alongside Christianity in the public schools?
Well, we'll let them speak for themselves.
I think that
people, a lot of evangelicals realize or hope, a lot of evangelicals hope that, you know, they're in a fair battle, you know, they'll win out. And so I think if you teach, as Professor Dennett says we should in the public schools, you teach these religions, you teach them objectively, you teach their history, you teach their scripture, and you keep it objective, you keep it academic, that this is giving important information for people to make decisions themselves. I am not advocating that we resolve ancient theological debates in schools.
And you said Europeans, who are much less religious in professions of faith, are actually better educated about what's between the covers of religious texts.
Well, much more so, and that does feed the hope of some atheists about this matter. They think, you know, some say, well, if you learn about religion, you learn to leave it alone.
Sherry's calling from Portsmouth, Virginia. Hi, Sherry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Listening has brought such a flood of memories back here, living in the backyard of Pat Robinson's part of the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
Had me running when I was 18, and I returned about 10 years ago, became a Unitarian, and had to deal with the Black Baptist upbringing. And the connection between Christianity and slavery is so strong here that I feel very guilty sometimes in my disdain.
The Bible was used on both sides of that debate.
Yeah, have a blessed day is a primary greeting from people, and they have not a clue if they are, you know, giving a blessing or a curse, and yet that is, and when you react to that, it is as if you're being ungodly and a heathen.
So teach it in the public schools, Sherry, yay or nay?
I am on the public school board in my city, and we had a fight about whether to have a moment of silence or a prayer, which was generally given by a Baptist or a Methodist minister, and we couldn't even agree as a school board, and to put it into the schools would be just a travesty. It would be chaos.
But isn't it completely different having a moment of silence or prayer from teaching here are the basic tenets of this and this and this religion?
If we can't agree in a board meeting whether or not it is reasonable and respectful to have a moment of silence, which is ultimately what won, but they were insisting on having their minister of choice do that, to put it into the schools, who would teach it, and we would never be able to agree on an authority who could do this in a way that would be agreeable to everyone. And it definitely needs to be done. The lack of knowledge about this is appalling. When you say pagan in this area, people think you mean some devil worshiper as opposed to earthbound. And it's sad and it's dangerous, but who would we allow to teach that?
Sherry, it's a good question and a tough one. We'll get to Stephen Prothero, but let me get some more listeners first. Kathy is calling from, let's see, who have we got up here next? We've got all kinds of callers, and I'm not sure who's up. Kathy from Framingham, Massachusetts, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Kathy. What do you think?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on this wonderful show. I read about the professor's book in the Times this weekend, and I think we are very much a multicultural society, and knowledge about other religions is as important as knowing the 50 states. I grew up in Canada, and I'm Jewish, and we said the Lord's Prayer every morning and had Bible reading, both Old and New Testament.
So you got a real education.
I did. And this is a very long time ago. But anyway, one year, a rabbi came in around Passover and discussed Passover in the class, and I grew up in a very WASP neighborhood, for want of a better expression. And I felt so validated. And I think that when you have classrooms full of children who either have no religion or many different religions, it adds to our cultural legacy, and it enhances respect for others just by knowing something about another religion. And I
but Kathy, are you confident that it won't lead to, you know, some other Jewish kid being led in the Lord's Prayer, a Christian prayer, or is that not, you think it's worth the try of bringing it in, even if that may come with it, whatever's planned?
You know, my kids grew up here and didn't say the Lord's Prayer in the morning. If I had felt very strongly about it, I would have said to them, just keep silent while they're saying it. I went to a summer camp where we went to church on Sunday, and my mother said, well, that's fine, but that's not what we believe.
But let's have the understanding that comes with knowing about it, I hear you saying.
Exactly. Ignorance is the worst thing. But I do agree with the prior caller who says it very much depends on who's teaching it and how it's taught. Even the best teacher could, you know, inadvertently slant it towards his or her own beliefs.
Yeah, it would not be difficult. We've got a lot of callers. Kathy, I appreciate yours. Let's get another here from Hudson, Massachusetts. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to say that I actually had it taught in school. I was my sophomore year in high school. I had my English teacher, who happened to be actually an evangelical Christian, taught a segment of English on the Bible as literature. And he used it. He was actually very good. He did not make it into a religious kind of doctrine conversation. It was, how is literature affected by the Bible?
Did it enrich your sense of the world, Karen?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I was one who thought, you know, religion in school shouldn't be there. But what he really did was he brought out the fact that if you don't understand references to the Bible or you don't understand references to religion, there's a whole segment of art, there's a whole segment of literature that you just won't understand. You won't grasp the nuances that is there that the author intended, or the references to, you know, even comparative religion.
And some of them, not just nuances certainly, but right at the core of a lot of our culture. Karen, thanks for that. Let me get one more, and I'll go to Stephen Prothero again from Lisbon, New York. Walter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I agree with both of those callers that talk about the who is going to do the teaching without slanting and biasing it. You know, a lot of teachers tend to put their political beliefs out there for the kids, and I see that when my kids come home. So, you know, that would worry me. I would want them to get it straight and not be biased in either way. The other thing I thought about was we're very tolerant in this country of other religion, of all religion. A lot of that may be because we're ignorant of the other religion, but I wonder if...
It's also right in our Constitution.
Right. I wonder if all of our tolerance would remain when the kids are in school and the teachers are trying valiantly to...
teach
to
it all.
...deliver this message unbiased. And I just have a little trouble thinking that they'd be able to do that.
Those are good questions and observations, Walter. Thank you for that. Stephen Prothero, there's a lot from our listeners on the table.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, the one thing to say is we're not talking about prayer here. I know that prayer is a contentious issue, whether we should have... You know, moments of silence in school districts, whether we should have prayer. It's pretty clear that the Supreme Court has said we're not allowed to have allowed to have prayer. And
could you teach the words of the Lord's Prayer as a cultural artifact?
Absolutely, and you should. And you should. Students should know what those words are. They should know when they're used. They should be able to recognize them. So yes, this is a tricky issue in the sense that these courses need to be taught objectively. They need to be taught academically. They need to be taught with a focus on the study of religion rather than the preaching of religion. And we need to find people who can do this.
Our caller Walter, you just heard him in Lisbon, New York, expressing skepticism that you can come up across the country in all these school classrooms with teachers who will keep their personal preferences or religion out.
I think there are teachers already who are not keeping their personal preferences out of courses, even their religious preferences out of science courses. We hear about this on occasion, and we have lawsuits.
Well, if they're doing it even now, and I think, but once you have the talk of the Bible sitting right there, wouldn't that just ramp it up?
Well, no. This isn't a purely hypothetical conversation, Tom. We have a lot of school districts that already teach these courses.
Really? A lot? I didn't think so. Modesto, California does.
We have 1 out of 12 in the United States teach courses about the Bible.
Mandatory for all students?
Well, not mandatory.
That's what
you're
proposing.
Right, and that's different. But this student who took this course on the Bible as literature, these courses are out there now, and these school districts are not erupting into chaos.
What about the thought that Walter also had that, we have a lot of tolerance in this country. Some part of it may just come from ignorance, from sort of the low level at which all this conversation is kept in our public schools.
Well, I think the fact that we have a high level of tolerance, which is quite amazing in the United States, how much tolerance we do have and how that message of the First Amendment really has gotten out there, that gives me hope for these courses in the classroom. I think that students have the sense that we should be tolerant, we should be able to learn about people of other faiths and do it without wanting to go out and kill one another.
Let me get a call, or I should say, let me invite in from New York City, Robbie Cohen. He is chair of the Department of Teaching and Learning, former director of NYU's Social Studies Program, professor of education and history. Robbie Cohen, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
So you hear what's being proposed. Stephen Prothero says you want cultural literacy. You're going to have religious literacy. Otherwise, we can't understand global issues, national issues, scientific issues, even our political debate. How about it? Would you be open to seeing that taught in the schools that you look most closely at?
Well, I think it's a lot of this discussion is really unrealistic and not connected to school realities. I actually think that it's good for people in schools to learn about religion as opposed to preaching religion in the schools. But the issue is, how do you do that? Right now, the place where religion, the history of religion, should be taught is in history and social studies courses, and which are mandatory in almost every state.
But does that happen? Is it really taught there? Or aren't most schools kind of tentative, hesitant to get into it?
Yeah, the problem is that actually the pressure has been to especially because of all the pressure on literacy and math testing, is to teach less history. So what's happening is even the existing course where what this professor would like to bring to the schools exists, they're being pressed to do less because the stress is on literacy and math. Of course, you can get literacy through doing history, too, but that's not really thought that way. So for me, the point is that if you want to have students learn more about religion in the public schools in an objective fashion. The way to do it is to protect and expand the history curriculum and to try to insert modules on the history of religion into the schools. There already are, in every global history course has got a section on history of religion, and American history too has a lot of religious history, you know, mixed in it, going all the way back to the abolitionists, even to the revolution itself.
Well, so somebody's not learning it if it's there. But are you afraid that greater emphasis, more time on religion, then do I hear you saying, would come potentially at the expense of reading and writing and arithmetic? We might know all about the Ten Commandments, but not how to add.
No. I think that students should. Part of literacy is understanding that history and religion is part of history. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it. I just think it's unrealistic and potentially abusive, I think, given what even everybody's been saying on the show, to have it a separate religious studies course. I think that's trying to impose a higher ed solution onto the public schools, and it won't work. I think if you want to bring religious people's knowledge of religion up, religious literacy up, the way to do it is in the history courses. That's where they belong, because, you know, people are saying, well, who's going to teach this? Well, the people who are going to teach it are going to be the social studies and history teachers. And the way that experts in religious studies can help, I think, to make that happen is by providing workshops and modules and materials that can help teachers know more about the history of religion. And basically that hasn't happened very much. Yeah. I mean, I work with teachers all the time, and we very rarely get materials from professors of religious studies or religious studies departments that, you know, elucidate the history of religion in any form or fashion. So I think, in other words, I think the idea of religious literacy is admirable, but I don't think the way that this is being advocated makes sense, in part also because it leads to abuse. When you put religion in the title of a course in a public school setting, given how politicized it is, it's going to lead to the kind of abuses that some of your callers have talked about. So why go there? Why not teach, ramp up historical religious literacy together with historical literacy by putting it where it belongs, which is in history courses?
We'll look at just that. Robbie Cohen in New York at NYU, thanks very much for joining us for a minute here. Appreciate it. Let me get a call from Williamsburg, Virginia. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Tom. I wanted just to point out, as you study the history of religion, that with the Christians and Jews and Muslims, all three in their gospel and in their religion have, they say, to embrace diversity,
yes,
to extend tolerance to people who are different from you. And the thing is that none of the three do that. And you look at what's going on in the Middle East now, not only are the Muslims fighting us, but they're fighting each other. And you go back for a couple of years, so how long were the problems in Northern Ireland?
So you're afraid teaching religion actually teaches or perpetuates conflict?
Well, what it perpetuates is that they're not teaching, embracing diversity. You know, they're saying, you're not like me. You know, that means I can hurt you.
Yeah, look at the history, and you'll see plenty. Dan, our time is short, but thanks for that. Stephen Prothero, let's take it in order here. First, with Robbie Cohen's comments, just do it in social studies or history class, please.
Well, a couple things to say about that. One is that I'm not so sure, as Professor Cohen says, that there's a lot of coverage of religion in current world and U.S. history textbooks. In my book on religious literacy, I have an extended discussion of that, and I don't find very much there in the textbooks.
But if you want to pump it up there, how about it?
Well, you know what? I'm willing to have, you know, there are experts in education. I'm happy to have conversations with them about the best way to do this. I think the best way to do it is with courses that are dedicated to it. It's a way to underscore the fact that this is a real problem. But I also think it would be terrific if we could find ways to bring religion and the history of religion into history and social studies courses. I think that's an important way to go, too.
And what about our caller Dan's point? I mean, you know, he says, yes, they may all teach, you know, beautiful messages, but if you look at the history, there is a tremendous history of conflict here. In essence, by teaching it, you perpetuate it. What do you say to that?
Well, it's interesting to even have a debate about that question. To even answer that question, you have to know something about the history of conflict inside religions. I mean,
talking about between religions
Well, inside or across, but I mean, I think that would be part of what you would learn. You know, you would learn about the fact that, oh, there isn't just one group that thinks Jerusalem is for them. There's three religions at least, that think Jerusalem is for them. What's the history of that conflict? What's the history of the conflict between Sunnis and Shiites? If we had had more understanding of the ways in which religious violence occurs, then we might have been better prepared for dealing with the war in Iraq. This is part of our education that we need to look at.
What do you think of the odds of this being embraced in this religious country?
Here's the deal. I think there's a big middle in the United States, both politically and religiously. I think that a lot of culture war conversation about religion has us thinking that there's a lot of people on the sort of wacky secular left and a lot of people on the wacky religious right, and I just don't think there's all that many people in those arenas. I think there's a lot of people in the middle. I think the overwhelming majority of Americans would favor teaching their children more about religion, and I think that this proposal has a real shot if people can start to talk about it.
Stephen Prothero, it's always good to talk to you. We appreciate your work here and the new book, Religious Literacy, What Every American Needs to Know and Doesn't. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And listeners, you can take your own literacy quiz at our website, onpointradio.org. Find out if you are a religious literate or illiterate there, at least with Stephen Prothero's 15 questions. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.